My first sale of the season. Well, it went perfectly to plan, which is to say, it was a total cock-up. In fact, I would have been concerned if it hadn't been, because it's kind of traditional. It's a rite of passage, if you like. It sets the bar for the rest of the season, and I like it as low as possible, a nice, comfortable, bottom-feeding baseline. The last thing you want, especially if you own a sailfish, is something to aspire to. Naturally, my boat wasn't ready because, as usual, spring sprung from nowhere and caught me on the hop, with all the component parts of my sailfish dispersed in attics, cellars, lock-ups, garages, gardens and bedrooms, all over several postcodes. Fortunately, though, I've got slightly more organised friends, and John Boyce is a rarity among your average chaotic modern cruising sailor. He actually could organise a piss-up in a brewery, but that's only because he owns one. Now, John keeps his Saddler 34, which is named Malden Gold after one of his ales, at Heybridge Basin. This enchanted nook on the Blackwater is almost narcotically tranquil, the kind of place that drugs you with its charm into a contented stupor. Sailors who arrived for the weekend years ago have ended up burning their masts on barbecues as their boats slowly surrender to the entangling embrace of the reeds and remain locked forever in a hazy, sweet daydream. Heybridge was getting to me already, and I was all for sitting in the cockpit, sipping a steaming teak-coloured cup of tea, admiring and stroking the new wood trim on John's cockpit lockers, and generally having a bit of a ponder about things and even stuff. I also had a hidden agenda. I'd completely forgotten how to sail. Every season it's exactly the same. I look at all the bits of the boat and just go gormless. Nothing means anything. As far as I could see, the only truly prudent and sailorly passage plan was to stay tied up, drinking tea. And it was tea time, after all. Anything else, I felt, would involve certain and painful death. But before I knew it, we'd slipped the mooring and John was reversing out of his berth, then going forward again, then backwards, forwards, backwards, backwards, forwards, forwards, and backwards and forwards a lot more. It's the first time I've felt car sick in a boat. Now, John's a trained engineer, so I imagine it was some kind of experiment. And with the test completed, a deft 12-point turn scattered a family of ducks and sent tsunami tremors through the liverboard community, causing dangerous tidal surges in their tumblers of Lambrusco. His timing couldn't have been worse, because you really don't want to upset the liverboards in the middle of deal or no deal. It's the focal point of their lives. Once out on the river, John's plan was to pick up a buoy while we wrestled up the Furling Genoa. I secured the boat by wrapping the rope round a cleat about 200 times. That was because I'd forgotten how you do the bit where you twist one bit under the other to cleat off. Instead, I'd fashioned a knotted bunch the size of a 1960s beehive hairdo and set it solid with a splodge of no more nails. In time, I hoped it would become a vital nesting habitat for the endangered native tattooed Essex orange marsh tit. It certainly wasn't going to come undone in a hurry. Trouble was it needed to, because I'd led the mooring line over the pulpit, which John said he'd quite like to keep. Well, I humoured him and unwrapped it all and did it again the way he liked. Then we had a go at bending on the Genoa, which involved entangling the spinnaker halyard round the furling gear and inside and outside the Genoa. That wasn't easy. I doubt if I could do it again if you asked me to. On the other hand, if you didn't, I'd have no trouble. Now, John's been sailing a lot longer than me, so he knows a lot more words, but none of them mean anything. As far as I'm concerned, all nautical mumbo-jumbo can be reduced to two essential catch-all words. They are thing and thingy. You don't even have to say port or starboard thingy. Just point and shout, "That thingy there." And with the communication sorted, we meandered down the Blackwater and settled down to the real business of cruising sailing, which is drinking treacle-thick tea, pondering the mysteries of the cosmos and talking total rubbish. If withy sticks are called withies, then why, I pondered, aren't they called withouties when they're not there? Come to think of it, how do they train the tiny monkeys to paint the tops of the ones in the entrance to Bradwell? These are big issues. And here's another one. We wondered whether John's boat had previously been owned by an ageing mod, because it is festooned with compasses the way mods accessorise their Lambrettas with wing mirrors. There were three in the cockpit. That was one on the steering binnacle, and port and starboard bulkhead ones. In fact, four if you count the autopilot. Down below there was a chart plus a GPS thingy and a handheld thingy, which you can kind of count as compasses. So that makes about six. Now, is that enough or too many? It's a tough one. And what's more, if mods sail saddlers, what do rockers sail? Hopped up westerly 22s, perhaps? Anyway, another saddler 34 poser was the bizarre non-slip ceilings, which are the same grippy, scratchy, grainy texture you usually get on the deck. It means if you wake from the underdeck pilot berth in a hurry, you'll get gravel rash on your nose. The other possibility is that we were sailing the boat upside down. John was going to check in the manual once we got to Bradwell. We also tackled one of the eternal mysteries of sailing. Now, you know when you call up a mariner on the VHF, why, when you sign off, do you instantly forget the berth you've been allocated? It happens every single time. Now, who knows the answer to that one? In unison with lavish theatrical draining sucks, we upended our mugs. Another cuppa? Yeah, go on then. We were back on form, talking quality rubbish, some skills you never forget.